Indie Media is DIY news. It is about people reporting their own news directly without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media.
There are 100 Indie Media or IMC websites worldwide providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns and protests.
There are so many people here who are saying no to the government today, and this is democracy in action.
Everybody's here. Everybody in the country seems to be here. They're just coming from all over the place. The banners are showing all the tiny, tiny little pockets of the country. Everybody has come down here.
The project started 3 years ago covering the massive Seattle protests which shut down the World Trade Organization's summit.
Uncensored and unsponsored, IMC sites can be updated anywhere, anytime, by anyone.
The open to all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news. What you are about to hear are some highlights from these global websites and from our very own UK IMC Wire. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indiemedia.org.uk.
The world is waking outside my window. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Drives my senses into the sunlight. For there are things that I must do. Wish me luck now, I have to leave you. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. With my friends now, up to the city. We're gonna shake the gates of hell. And I will tell them, we will tell them.
And global IMC roundups. We have coming up audio from the Pink Castle retrial. For those who need reminding, the Pink Castle was a successful field occupation in a giant pink castle which prevented the planting of GM crops, as well as an interview with Liz Snook, who was one of those prosecuted in the retrial, as well as audio from YSIS to go out on. Bon appetit.
And a reminder to stop shopping, of course, for Christmas, and to keep loving. I'm Viper.
And I'm Moonflower.
And we're here to bring you lots of bad news, sorry. But some good stuff too. Some inspiring and delightful delights to make your ears think, wow, that's a great idea. So, here you go.
We're now going out with Tony's theme. This isn't for Tony Blair. It's a great track by the Pixies.
Da-da-da-da!
Bye.
strange Pixie track, wasn't it? Well, it wasn't the Pixies, that's why. It was Rocket from the Crypt, born in 69. So, there you go. Okay, so we've got some bad news for you. Here we go. Every minute of the day, people are killed by conventional arms. So last Wednesday's International Human Rights Day was the day a number of countries pledged their support for an international arms treaty. Unfortunately, it wasn't the world's biggest arms exporters, but the political leaders of Brazil, Cambodia, Mali, Macedonia, Costa Rica, Finland, and the Netherlands that made the announcement. It will be interesting to see if any of the five permanent members of the UN Security Council, the largest producers of traders in weapons, rush over and put their name to such a treaty. Only the other day, Amnesty International published The Pain Merchants, which is a report that showed that last year the Bush administration approved the import of electroshock weapons that valued at $14.7 million and restraints worth $4.4 million. 45 countries bought the stuff, including 19 that have been cited for the use of such weapons to torture prisoners. Take Turkey, for example. In one case, a 17-year-old schoolgirl who had been detained for distributing leaflets calling for Kurdish education was stripped, threatened with rape, and tortured with electric shocks to her feet, legs, and stomach. International Human Rights Day marked the 55th anniversary of the signing of Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Drafted in 1948, a response to the recently uncovered horrors of fascism and intolerance, this document affirms that everyone has the right to freedom of peaceful assembly and association, and that everyone has the right to form and to join trade unions for the protection of his or her interests. One of the largest global campaigns promoted on International Human Rights Day was the Million Faces petition. Begun by Oxfam International, the project hopes to collect a million signatures with accompanying photos by 206. This multimedia campaign will then be presented to the United Nations, which has scheduled a meeting to deal with the global arms crisis that summer. The petition is part of a larger Control Arms campaign, which seeks global support for an international arms treaty to strictly limit the small arms trade. According to recent estimates, the use of conventional arms are responsible for the deaths of approximately 1,300 people every single day. The vast majority of victims are civilians or non-combatant. In London, anti-militarist activities from the D10 group invite themselves to a party in two army recruitment centres to celebrate Human Rights Day. People with silvery capes, pointy hats reading Happy Human Rights Day and other bits of silvery clothing came to have a cake party, distributing leaflets dealing with the issue, as well as vegan cake and confettists.
Right, excuse me. The government are looking for 10,000 good citizens to help them develop the technology for their superb new ID card, which they claim will help us to get rid of the UK of terrorists and maybe illegal immigrants at a stroke. Being a biometric ID card, it will hold such data as fingerprints and iris eye scans. The pilot, running from January to June 2004, involves close collaboration between the Home Office, Driver Vehicle Licensing Agency and Passport Service, according to an official statement. The organisers have not yet selected any locations for the pilot, but it is understood that one passport office will be involved along with three other sites and some, quote, mobile units. IT supplier Schlumberger Samer ran the contract for the pilot at the end of last month. The passport service first issued a tender for the pilot 8 months ago, with six companies bidding for the work. The Home Office has refused to comment on how much the contract is worth, citing commercial confidentiality. It is planned to start introducing identity cards on a phased basis from 2007-2008, together with the incremental rollout of biometric passports and driving licence. This would mean that 80% of the population could be covered within 5 years. If you'd like to help the trials, contact Melanie Briere at Morrie on email at trial@morrie.com. If you'd like some background on the contentious issues around biometric ID, including links to the New Scientist magazine, which recently refuted the ideas that such cards will help cut down on terror or fraud, see www.stand.org.uk. And now we have the Pixies track, Tony's Theme.
This is a song about a superhero named Tony. We'll you go. Okay, that was the Pixies, finally. Okay, well, here we go. Some slightly goodish news here, but don't get too excited. Barclays Bank have decided not to provide a loan to the controversial Baku-Cheyenne oil pipeline. Campaigners against the pipeline see this as a major victory. But two other banks, the HSBC and the Royal Bank of Scotland, are yet to make decisions on loans on the 20th of December. For more information, see www.bakucheyenne.org.uk. Last week, 15 people who have been, quote, resettled from their land to make way for the Sardar Sarovar Dam in the... No, you'll have to excuse me here. I'm
Narmada
not familiar with it.
Valley.
Narmada Valley in India attempted suicide. This very sad event brought to the attention of the world the terrible effect of the dam pushed through by the Indian government. Surveyors have shown that despite government claims, many of the displaced people have not received the jobs and land that they'd originally been promised. See www.narmada, that's narmada.org. In Faslane, the home of the Trident nuclear submarines, the Faslane was shut down for 4 hours last week on Tuesday when an activist climbed onto an MOD police gate guarding the site. While she was there, all personnel were confined to the barracks. She left after spraying "Merry Christmas" from Faslane, "No War" on the gate.
Last Saturday night, preparations were underway for a free party at the disused Sun Alliance building on Jamaica Street in Bristol. By 9:30pm, about 30 people were in the building and the disused space was now getting a new lease of life as decor covered the walls and ceiling and people were ready for a night with bands and DJs. And then the police showed up. Wary of reports of how riot police have broken up another Bristol area party the weekend before, the people setting up tried talking to the police, but to no avail. Soon there were around 30 police outside the building as police in riot gear. With faces covered and no visible ID numbers, they began battering the front door down. People reported that, fearing for their safety, a barricade was hastily set up inside the building to try and delay the riot police. Reports also state that one person sustained serious hand injuries, severing tendons, as police tore the barricade down. However, the people inside beat a hasty retreat via a back door and there were no arrests. People involved in the party scene hope this is not a pattern that will be repeated during the Christmas festives period. And now we have a track. It's the Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy called Just Like Superheroes Amos and Andy.
You know, Andy, it just occurred to me, being how me and you and great music lovers, this is a voice that we should give to the world. Well, how much we gotta get? All we gonna get is a measly 50% of the box office receipts. 50% of the receipts? Well, I thought we was doing this because we're music lovers. Oh, yeah, Andy. But there ain't a music lover in town to get less than 50%. You see, that's the standard rate for music loving.
And dandy, just like Amos and Andy. What will we do to become famous and dandy? Just like Amos and Andy. It's quite a spectacle to see us landing. Waste receptacles as if we planned it. We're never skeptical when we get branded and disrespectful because we feel abandoned. The height of mediocrity is the challenge, crawling through the entrails of imbalance. We learn to like to be the heroes. We learn to lie to be brand name Negroes. We learn to laugh to avoid being angry. And we learn to kill and learn to go hungry. We learn not to feel for protection. And we learn to flaunt when we get an erection. But what will we do to become famous and dandy? Just like Amos and Andy. What will we do to become famous and dandy? Just like Amos and Andy. We're born believing
are greater than circumstance, infinitely stronger than chances. Our first breath is handed, we taste the double standard. The need to wear the mask, and with society's nurturing, the psychoplastic surgery begins to take effect as our souls watch astounded, our characters flounder. Duplicitous identity. Diction and contradiction have become the skills of assimilation. Razor home to perfection from the moment of creation. It's gone from identity crisis to survival. Sleepy shot to rifle, sin to revival. Try to get looked at, but not poked in the eyeball. We're warned of our impurities, afraid of insecurity. Real life experts of the artificial. Athletes and entertainers have become the minstrels on commercials. But what will we do to become famous and dandy? Just like Amos and Andy. What will we do to become famous and dandy? Just like Amos and Andy. By the media's elite. Positive or negative attention is viewed as success. USDA African American beef is seen as progress. We never ask ourselves too many questions, too much truth and introspection. Maintain the regimentation and avoid self-degradation. We act out all the stereotypes, try to use them as decor. And we become shining examples of the system we set out to destroy. Cause even in the most radical of groups, you will find that when you stray from the doctrine, you'll see hard times. But what will we do to become famous and dandy? Just like Amos and Andy. What will we do to become famous and dandy? Just like Amos and Andy, being kicked in the closed mouth or smiling with no teeth. They're both choices, yes, but it's impossible to eat. Uneducated, underdeveloped, undisciplined, but mostly unaware. We join the flavor of the month club. We swallow the flavor of the month. When holding our crotch was the flavor of the month. Bitch, this bitch, that was the flavor of the month. Being a thug was the flavor of the month. The flavor of the month. Adidas shoes was the flavor of the month. Then fashion dudes was the flavor of the month. Gentrification, the flavor of the month. Then isolation was the flavor of the month. My pocket's so empty I can feel my testicles, cause I spent all my money on some plastic African necklaces. And I still don't know what the colors mean. Red, black, and green. But what will we do to become famous and dandy? Just like Amos and Andy. What will we do to become famous and dandy? Just like Amos and Andy. What will we do to become famous and dandy? Just like Amos and Andy. What will we do to become famous and dandy? Just like Amos and Andy.
We have the audio from the Pink Castle retrial. Now, what actually happened, and we're going to be speaking to Liz Snook, one of the people involved in the retrial, was originally they had a favourable ruling that they would not be prosecuted for aggravated trespass, but the High Court actually said that they disapproved of this ruling and they were all ordered back to court. So now we have some audio from outside Weymouth Court.
We're outside Weymouth Magistrates Court here at, on the lovely seaside Riviera of England. on a hearing for aggravated trespass to do with trying to obstruct the planting of GM crops in a field just up the road.
I'm here to get, I think, to get convicted and sentenced for aggravated trespass.
Aggravated trespass for locking onto tractors to prevent a GM crop being planted.
That was going to destroy someone else's livelihood, poison the countryside and open the way for greater control over the seed and therefore people's livelihood.
Well, this court appearance comes after we won our case.
We were acquitted, we were found not guilty of aggravated trespass.
We used common law of necessity to protect property, which basically says that we did what was something a reasonable person would do under the same circumstances.
The GM crop was going to cause damage, that damage would be imminent as soon as it was planted, there was therefore necessity to act, and that we argued that we would use reasonable force in order to prevent it from being planted. The judge accepted all three parts of that defence.
And after 2 days of complicated evidence, the judge agreed that we were right.
He found us not guilty.
So we were okay to trespass, we were okay to lock on to the digger, that's what the judge recognised, because he recognised there was a greater wrong about to take place, you know, i.e. GM pollution all over the place.
So yeah, that's the right decision, the right answer. Thank you very much, judge.
And then on appeal, two High Court judges who didn't even get to read our evidence got to find us guilty on some legal technicality.
Because the Crown Prosecution Service don't like this sort of very democratic legal defence to become become established law, they appealed against it.
I think what the Crown Prosecution Service were keen to do was make sure that they sent a very strong message that this wasn't going to be an acceptable line of defence.
And after only 2 hours of highly case-based evidence given in the High Court, the High Court judges decided that the verdict should be overturned.
However, as I understand, no new case law has been written, so actually that avenue hasn't been closed off for other people.
So they appealed and they won, surprise, surprise.
We've been sent back to the Magistrates' Court with an order to convict us and sentence us this afternoon.
And so now we've got to go back before the same judge that agrees that we're not guilty and be told that we are guilty because he doesn't have any choice in the matter.
Hopefully, just let us off and we'll all be home for tea and cake.
Basically, since I received the letter in the post 3-4 weeks ago, I've known that we are to be found guilty and to be sentenced today.
Frankly, this is outrageous and it shouldn't have been allowed to get to this stage.
And now I've either got to pay a fine or go to prison.
It's bloody ridiculous, really, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? I don't know. Don't know what to say. It's just so feel shit about it. I'm not going to pay any fine that I'm given for this particular thing because why should I? I was acting right. I feel that this thing has now been proved, even by the government's own tests, to be dangerous to the countryside. It's going to affect biodiversity. It's really important, actually, that we bloody wake up to it. I mean, it's so important, I'm even prepared to go down for it. And I'm a bit scared about that, but this is crap.
This is the first time I've ever been found guilty for anything. It's all new ground for me.
And I'm a bit nervous, really. I don't really know what to do. But I take it in my stride.
I'm going to refuse to pay on the grounds that I didn't do anything wrong, so I'm not going to help subsidise the state's continuation of this sort of thing.
I am likely to pay or find a way of getting someone to pay for me, and that I really don't want to have stress of a prison sentence or bailiffs banging on my door and coming to take everything away.
Yeah, if we do go down for this, I feel it's sort of significant in the way that dissent and any voices of protest about GM have tried to be shut out, and despite the fact 90% of the people saying and recognising that we don't need it, it's bad for the environment and it's only good for a small group of businessmen, and it's always the case. It's like, come on, when are we going to get it? And if it means I've got to spend Christmas in prison, which is a really hard thing with all the friends and family, and like, you know, solstice is going to be fires and mead and cake, and I'm going to be in a bloody locker. So yeah, you know, if I didn't feel strongly about it, I wouldn't be prepared to be doing that. So, sod it.
Do you ever question your life?
Hello, now we're talking to Liz, who was one of the people prosecuted.
Hello, Liz.
Hello there.
Right, so you said that you were not prepared to pay the fine. What's all that about?
Well, basically, we are not guilty. This piece of legislation, aggravated trespass, was created 8 years ago by the Tory government to outlaw civil disobedience. It exists purely to protect the interests of big business over the interests of the people. And we successfully managed to get a piece of common law which is basically really interesting. It's stuff that, you know, have evolved over the history of English courts as something that ordinary people recognise as a sensible thing to do. And for the first time ever, managed to get that to work in a court and win on this argument that we were defending property. And yet, because of the legal technicalities surrounding this law, which is specifically designed to outlaw protest, that's been overturned. So, I just can't give them any money, really, when we're right and they're wrong. So they'll just have to pay for a bit of a holiday for me, Majesty's pleasure, I think.
And so, in the first place, you went to court, and the judge in the first case when you went to court did not find you guilty.
Yeah, I mean, he agreed that what we were doing was a reasonable thing to do under the circumstances. He recognised that the crop that was being planted posed an immediate threat to surrounding farmers through cross-contamination of GM pollution, and that an ordinary reasonable person under the same circumstances would have done the same thing to try and stop this field from being planted. And, you know, we were very impressed by the fact that he actually was prepared to stick his neck out and to come to that conclusion. But it's actually the only logical conclusion you can come to if you look at the evidence. And as I say, it's only this minor legal technicality about whether the work of planting the field had a licence or not, which actually overturned the decision in the end anyway.
So who did bring you back to court? Who brought you to the High Court? Whose idea was this?
Well, the Crown Prosecution Service were very pissed off about the fact that they'd lost this case. They weren't expecting to. Mm-hmm. And the last thing they wanted was to open this sort of avenue up to other activists doing similar things. I mean, this law has been attempted to be used by people doing sanctions-breaking stuff in Iraq and that sort of thing. And as I say, it's a very democratic law. It opens the way for people to say, I did what a normally reasonable person would do under the same circumstances, and I did it to prevent something worse from happening, and that's makes my actions lawful. And the good thing about what happened when they took us to the High Court was that they didn't get what they wanted, which was a change in the law so that this is closed off to other people as a defence. Other people can still try and use this. It just means that our case law, which, as I say, previously had never occurred before, doesn't now stand in the statute books because they've ruled that in this specific case we couldn't use it. But that's about all, really.
So what are you going to do next? What's the next step for you?
Well, the next step is to go back to the regional courts and explain the situation to them and find out how they want to transfer the fine of £1,000 costs, which is pretty punitive, really, and outrageous, into a prison sentence. And hopefully that will happen sometime after Christmas. And we'll just have to see how it goes. But in the meantime, we're getting on with the important business of trying to stop the commercialisation of GM crops in the UK, because this variety that we were trying to stop being planted is the same one that the government now wants to grow on a commercial level in 2005 and give approval of this Christmas. So, yeah.
So what's the next set of protests and campaigns coming up to try and stop this crop being planted?
Well, there's a number of campaigns. One of them is the Green Gloves Pledge, which is basically a pledge for people all around the country who to say that they will pull up or support those who pull up GM crops if they're grown commercially. And this is basically a way of saying to the industry and the government beforehand, you can give these the go-ahead on paper, but no one's going to plant them because no one's going to make any money on them, not only because they're a bad crop, which doesn't do what it says on the tin, but also because they're not going to stay in the ground long enough due to protests. And you can sign up to that online by going to www.greengloves.org or get it through the post. I don't have the number for ringing that off the top of my head, but I'm sure somebody can track it down later. And by trying to avoid the use of GM in animal feed, that's how the majority of GM enters our food chain at the moment. That's the financial lifeline that's keeping the biotech industry afloat. And supermarkets like Sainsbury's and Tesco promised to phase out their use of GM animal feed 3 or 4 years ago, and they so far failed to do so. If pressure could be put back on them to ensure that this doesn't happen, that they actually keep that promise and they stop feeding GM, then there won't be any market available if these crops do get commercialised, so they won't be sold.
Thank you. Well, good luck with everything, and we'll feature you if you do go to prison. We'll kind of start a prisoner support campaign for you and get you sent lots of GMO food in the nick. Okay, take care, Liz.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye. And website address, again, is www.greengloves.org. And now, the majority of the population in Uruguay votes against privatisation. Last week, a law which sought to terminate the monopoly of the national oil enterprise, ANCAP, on the import and export, as well as refining of crude oil, was voted down by the overwhelming majority of the approximate 2.5 million voters in Uruguay. Everywhere in the country, there were victory celebrations held by opponents of privatisation. The main streets of Montevideo were crowded with cars as whole families leaned out the windows, honked their horns continuously, and flew flags. The vote had taken place the previous Sunday and saw 16 out of 19 provinces of the country vote with "Sí, yes" on pink paper in favour of rejecting the privatisation.
And now we have a track which I think Venus wants to introduce.
Is it me and Bobby McGee?
Yes!
Sing along really at the top of your voices if you know the words to this, because it's a really rocking TikTok and funky song, and it's by Janis Joplin.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, when I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way to New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew. Another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, I mean nothing, honey, if it ain't free. Yeah, feeling good was easy, love, when he sang the blues. You know, feeling good was good enough for me. Good enough for me and my Bobby, yeah. From the Kentucky coal mine, next to mine. Freedom's just another word for
nothing left to lose.
Nothing, that's all that Bobby left me. But feeling good was easy, love, when he sang the blues.
Feeling good was good enough for me. Mm-hmm. Good enough for me and my Bobby McGee. Oh God, that was Bobby McGee, right? You got that? Yeah, rocking TikTok and Janis Joplin. Keep singing.
Okay, now we have some news from Iraq, which is coming from Eva, who's in Basra at the moment. And this is a story that she posted to the radio list, and it goes like this. British soldiers are now coming under attack more than they did during the war, according to an anonymous soldier source based in Basra. Conversation at an undisclosed military location revealed that a British convoy came under fire yesterday on the highway to Basra Airport, home to the British Forces Divisional HQ and corporate war profiteers Bechtel. The source said that a vehicle had been hit and soldiers returned fire, but there were no injuries. Probed further, he said, "Our lads are coming under attack more now than they were during the war. We're getting shot at every day. There's much more danger now than during the war." He went on to say that the situation was beginning to mirror that of the occupation in Northern Ireland, where soldiers are starting to get killed every day and it will barely make the papers. He stressed that it seems like everyone's forgotten about us back home. When questioned about heavy machine gun fire heard 2 days ago at approximately 4:30 p.m. near the Coalition Provisional Authority South Headquarters based in the former Ba'ath Republican Palace, he put it down to tribal warfare. Asked to explain the situation with regards to this warfare, he said, "There's whole villages out there, thousands of people with tribes fighting each other. We don't want to get into the middle of that. Us going in there with 8 of us, I don't think so." This statement implied that troop levels were either too low or there was an unwillingness for British forces to carry out their obligations under the 1949 Geneva Conventions to provide for the safety of the civilian population. British troops can be mustered up to contain and kill protesters, as happened with a spontaneous demonstration involving former soldiers demanding survival benefits in Maqual in September and also in Mahal al-Kabir in June, where 4 demonstrators were shot dead protesting against British forces' inflaming of religious cultural taboos by humiliating women by entering their rooms without permission. The heavy gunfire erupted in rapid continual bursts lasting 20 to 30 seconds 2 days ago. A corporate manager frequenting the palace told me, "The gunfire came from beside the palace. Beside the palace, who would risk almost certain death blasting off a heavy ammo machine gun outside the headquarters of the British Occupation Administration? For what? Stress release? A frustration vent? Some kind of prolonged symbolic warning? The fire must have been directed at the palace itself." To credit both the historical Ba'ath fighting resistance in the south and the efforts of the working class British soldiers patrolling the streets of Basra, many people are relieved, appreciative, and speak well of the British soldiers, saying, "They're nice, they're good," but they do get a lot of thumbs up when they drive by too. "But the Americans know," add most people, as US troops were the first to come through and occupy the area, shooting, beating, and searching people indiscriminately and behaving aggressively, probably due to desert battle and colleague death trauma. 70% of the front line of the advance was slaughtered coming into Iraq, meaning the second joined the battered first and third line, and the suspicion of the Fahadim blended into the local population everywhere. So that's an update from a soldier out in Basra that was posted to The Wire. We're going to have a track now. We're going to go to a Small Faces track, I believe. Oh no, we're going to Prison Blues of the South album again, which is a track called How I Got in the Pen.
I learned that song in Tennessee.
You write it on the farm?
Yeah, it's county farm.
Well, how come you got in so much trouble?
Well, boss, the way I got in trouble, the first time, the folks was barring me, and I just got in the penitentiary and just waking so much, I had to wake and cut up the fella and shoot him up. And then when I got out of the penitentiary, I thought I had waked enough, and I decided I couldn't make my living without waking, and I come out to putting pistols on folks, and that wouldn't do it, and I just come out to stealing everything, wasn't hard to nail down, and the police had just come out to running me every which way, every way I turned. So after I got them started to run me, I just kept on doing wrong. Fighting, stealing, you know, and robbing, and sometime I wouldn't be done nothing, but I've been doing so much that when they'd get me, well, I'd have been got it now. And 1 or 2 times they arrest me, and I told them I hadn't done nothing. They said, "Well, I arrest you in advance, you're going to do something." So I just, that's the way I stayed, that y'all was out of.
Yeah.
in and out for the last 18 years.
Last Thursday, anti-genetic engineering campaigners paid a visit to Bayer's crop science pesticide manufacturing site in Widnes to protest against Bayer's involvement in GM crops. Three people attempted to enter the office and got as far as the entrance lobby. The second door leading to the reception was already locked. The two receptionists swiftly locked away all their files and papers. Site security scuttled up and down the stairs, and the tannoy announced there is a peaceful protest. After playing with the eternal phone in the lobby for a while, they got the site manager on the phone, who agreed to come and talk to them. 30 minutes later, the police arrived and two campaigners were invited inside for a quiet, detailed discussion with the manager, who was very anxious to point out that his site had nothing to do with GM. However, he refused to pass on a statement to his bosses demanding Bayer pull out of GM. Meanwhile, people outside held up banners and made lots of noise with drums, megaphones, whistles, air horns, and the cars in the staff car park were leafleted, and most passers-by gave their support. And site security did a very good job at barricading the gates, telling several delivery lorries to come back later.
Now, up and coming things. Tomorrow night there's a screening of The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, a film about the recent failed Venezuelan coup. Don't know how much tickets are, but it's at 6:45 at the Ritzy in Cole Harbour Lane in Brixton. Following on from reports recently about Buy Nothing Day, this Saturday there will also be a free shop. Let's go. Set up at Oxford Circus in London from midday. It's not a buy nothing action, but more of a free exchange action. A similar event was held last Christmas on Oxford Street with stalls set up, giving away everything from clothes to children's toys and free software. Free food was also served as a number of renegade Santas crowded the streets. Police arrested one person during the afternoon in what participants said was a pretty attempt to intimidate people. Meanwhile, in Manchester, there's an alternative Christmas carol service planned for the same day, starting at 1:30. The alternative carols will raise issues regarding war, conflict, US policies, Tony Blair and George Bush, over consumption, shopping and consumerism, and the wall being built in Palestine. On the other hand, the traditional carols with modified words, not genetically modified, I think just modified, will promote world peace and support anti-war protests. Now, there's some good news, eh?
News of two forthcoming court cases. Three people are due in court in March 2004 for their part in a blockade of a bridge during the anti-G8 protests in Evian and the surrounding Swiss region in early June this year. During the blockade, police cut the ropes that a UK activist was suspended from on the bridge, causing Martin Shaw to fall over 20 metres and sustain serious injuries. Martin is now recovering and can walk without crutches, but only very slowly. Despite massive media attention at the time of the injuries, there still has not been any date set for the case against the police responsible for cutting the ropes the climbers were suspended from.
The judicial review around the effective kidnapping by police of 150 people trying to attend a demonstration at Fairford, the base where the American bombers flew from during the war in Iraq, and their forcible return to London under large police escort, is due to be heard at the Royal Courts of Justice on Thursday the 15th and Friday the 16th of January 2004. Unless a judgment is delivered by the two judges on the second day of the hearing, the judgment will be given at a second hearing, probably 3 to 4 weeks later. Campaigners are expected to hold a vigil outside the court while the judicial review is in progress.
And now we're going to some audio sent to us about WISIS, which we spoke to about Dave. What am I talking about? We spoke to with Dave last week on the show last week. And then that's about it for this week.
One more thing. Okay, and there's a benefit gig, and it's for women. It's the Women Against Rape thing. Now, the Rape Crisis Centre has been shut down by the British government. They've lost their funding, and which is very interesting, considering they actually made the British government made rape illegal within marriage themselves in 1991. But they've lost their funding now for the Rape Crisis Centre, so they're having a Christmas benefit gig. They're going to have Maxi Jazz which is from Faithless, a DJ set. Lorna Marshall, deep soulful voice. A girl called Rob, singer and songwriter. The Scene, the Sonic Soul. And it's on Sunday, the 21st of December. So nice chilled out Sunday, and supporting this cause. And it's at the Telegraph Cafe Bar, 228 Brixton Hill, SW2. The doors open at 7 p.m. and the acts start at 8. It's £6 for unwaged, £10 for waged, and £25 to sponsor a Women Against Rape. There is disability access, a ramp, and there's loo as well for disability people. And if you want to get in contact with anybody, you can contact 0207 482 2496 or email womenagainst@womenagainstrape.net. Okay.
And also, this is something that I have to announce or I will get my legs chopped off.
No, she won't.
There's an out-to-lunch club featuring good coffee and breakfast in bread, and also newspapers, chilled music and cheap, delicious Christmas presents on production of a UB40 or other proofs of poverty. This is held at Lark from 11 on Solstice Sunday. Now, Lark is Fieldgate Street near Whitechapel. So get along there if you fancy a Christmas present and some nice food and just
free
a
presents.
General chill out.
Okay. And, yeah, it's number 62 Fieldgate Street, eh?
Yeah, 62. Yeah. Okay, goodbye, everybody.
Lots of love. Happy Solstice. Stop shopping. Keep loving. Mwah. Turn off your lights when you leave the office, eh? Lots of love.
Bye-bye.
So I just met Mikhail on the bus from Reportières sans Frontières. You were flyering people because you've been excluded from the summit. Could you first say a little bit about who your organisation is?
Yes, hello. Reportières sans Frontières, or Reporters Without Borders in English, is a press freedom organisation, one of the main ones in the world. The siege is in Paris, and we have a section here in Switzerland as well.
And why have you been excluded from the summit?
Okay, that started when at the Human Rights Commission in March, which was headed by Libya, and we thought as a press freedom organization that we just could not take this, Libya being the president of the Human Rights Commission, that was absurd. So we just threw some leaflets inside the UN to protest against this presidency. And countries like Cuba, Zimbabwe, Libya, Tunisia, Russia, China, which have serious press freedom violations, just jumped on the occasion to ask for our exclusion. And then there was finally a short majority of countries to vote our exclusion.
Can you explain a bit more about the circumstances in which you met you? What are you doing on the buses and what do you hope to achieve with that?
Okay, since we're excluded from the summit, we decided, okay, that's not going to prevent us from having a voice being heard from the people here in the summit. So what we did is we decided to set a radio program, and we are broadcasting today this special program. It's a pirate radio. We're not allowed to do it, but we don't care. We said we would have a voice heard from the delegates and the participants, and that's why we put this radio station on. And we are also distributing small transistors so that all the that we give to the delegates and the participants of the World Summit so that they can hear our voice through our radio program.
But you wanted to participate in this summit. What do you expect is going to be happening at the summit?
Well, what we say is always the same message, very easy. We say there are lots of issues about information, but anyway, it should flow very easily, and there shouldn't be any censorship except when people call for hatred, and that's the only exception, or when you defame somebody. The problem is all the big men that come to a summit like this, you know, like Mr. Mugabe, who as one of the only presidents that have, that is coming to Geneva, is have a very, very serious problem with his press in the country. So I'd love to give this transistor to Mr. Mugabe so that we would be able to listen to our radio program. So it's amazing that such a big summit, finally only the heads of the state that come are people from China, Russia, Zimbabwe. And so that's why we are very, very worried about it.
You also, on your flyer that you were handing out, you were also talking about, in particular, the cyber, the restrictions on cyber information in certain countries. Could you say something about that?
Yes, again, it's we are going to hear lots of heads of state who are going to say, make beautiful declarations about press freedom and expression. But the problem is that they sign text. First, it's very hard to have a consensus on the text. But even when the text is good and the principles are good, we know that these governments are not going to respect these texts. Going back to the question, is taking the example of China, for example, we know that there are more than 30 people in jail because they just use the internet and because they try to circulate information about democracy, and that's just not possible in China. Not only China prevents its people to consult from preventing from surfing on the net, but also they send to jail the ones that will try to put some information different from the state. Again, I think since we're talking a lot about technology and the internet at the summit, I'd like to underline again, yes, the situation in China, which is one of the worst as far as the internet is concerned, but also in Tunisia and also in the Maldives. You know, it's a beautiful postcard of the country, but there are three people that were jailed to a life sentence because they were spreading some information on the net. And people should be aware of this, and they should consult the internet, for example, our website or other press freedom organization websites.
What is your website?
It's our website is www.rsf.org.
I will take this opportunity to repeat a very nice sentence that I heard about Richard, and it says, "You may dislike his attitude, but you cannot avoid his message."
Well, of course, you can say the same thing about Microsoft and the movie companies and the record companies. You may dislike their attitude, but you can't avoid their message either. I think that the useful way to divide works so that we can think about them ethically is based on their purpose, how they are used socially. And I've identified three categories. There are functional works, works that say somebody's views, and works of art or entertainment. I just read that in Germany, the movie companies are advertising, "Don't share videos or you'll get raped in prison." This shows what vicious monsters they are. I would like to urge people to, you know, it may be too much to ask that you should never pay to watch a movie ever at all. But I'd like to urge you to think before you do so, is there any specific reason to think the movie is good? And if there isn't, then don't do it. Now this, in its form, it's different from a total boycott of Hollywood. But in practical effect, it's almost the same. They don't say that users should be free to study and change and redistribute software. They say that this is advantageous because it permits a cooperative development model that produces technically superior software. So the only value that they cite is a technical, practical value. They don't cite ethical, social values as the reason. They don't say that this freedom is an ethical, social issue. And that's why they focus so much on the development model. But I think that the freedom is the important thing. If a program is free software, if it respects my freedom, then I don't care that much how people developed that version. Whether it's a whole group that invites lots of people to participate,